This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up a bit later on the Junks, actually in about 25 minutes, Nick Dowd from your Washington Capitals. He will join us at 8:25. And Tony Skin, head coach of the George Mason Patriots Hoops program, he'll be in studio with us at 9 a.m. So lots of guests upcoming. Believe joining us right now on the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Tom Lavero, Washington Times columnist. I'm 99.8% sure he's calling us from some oceanfront spot in Florida. I hope I'm correct with that, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing okay, boys. I'm calling you from the Lavero Southern Compound, Winter Compound, here in Miramar Beach, Florida, home of Jack Del Rio.
So where is that? Good. What is that near?
That's in the Panhandle, about an hour east of Pensacola.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So is this a permanent Lavero compound? Is this a rental? Can you give us some skinny on that?
No, it's just a rental, but every January and February for the past 5 or 6 years, I head south.
Mm-hmm. You're a snowbird. Very good.
Well, that's smart. It sucks up here.
So, Barry Saluga wrote a nice column about the learners and how they're not for sale anymore. And I guess the essence is you kind of, at the end of the day, have a bone to pick with sort of the idea that they're still, like, going to even be competitive at all, that they're not spending money, they have an ownership issue, and... Is your contention, Tom, that they're definitely still for sale because they're not spending money, or that they got an ownership problem?
Well, they have an ownership problem. I don't think they're on the market for sale, but I think if somebody came along with the right price, they would be. But, you know, try to buy a box of paperclip from the learners. It's a difficult test to buy anything from them. So it's always going to be a difficult process. So I don't think they're for sale right now. And surprisingly, when they were for sale, there weren't any names that surfaced except for Ted Leonsis.
Right.
And so I don't understand why that is, and that still remains the case. So I don't think they're for sale anymore. My issue is the ownership, particularly this facade that they put up, that they're willing to put up the money. All Mike Rizzo has to do is ask. That's a joke.
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter yesterday, and you can fill us in. The Christian Walker story, that Rizzo was about to sign him and then called Lerner. What's the story there?
Well, you know, Mark Lerner has pledged in a 2023 interview with Dan Coco that anytime Mike needs a resource, all he's got to do is ask. Well, according to my sources, that when it came time to give Walker a 3-year deal, for $60 million, that the learners balked.
Mm-hmm.
They said no. They didn't want to go the years.
So they wanted to go maybe 1 year or two, but not three.
Yeah, 3 years.
3 years.
I mean, $60 million. You know, that over 3 years, $20 million a year. That is not
that's nothing.
A mega signing.
Right.
Do they have, I don't even know, when I think about it off the top of my head, now that they've kind of gotten rid of Corbin and these other guys, who's their highest salary guy?
It's low.
Which is?
I'm guessing, I mean, Tom, you might know better than me, but I think Nate Lowe, who they signed from the Rangers.
What's he making?
I think he's their highest ranking or highest salary per year.
Yeah, I think on the active roster.
Yeah.
You know, they're still carrying Stras.
Right, right.
And they're still paying deferred payments on Scherzer and all that. But every team has that kind of situation. Yeah. I mean, they have a roster that, as of last week, had a $60 million payroll.
Lowe's at $10.3 million.
There you go.
Looks like his number. So Walker would have been by far their highest paid guy, like double.
Yes.
The next closest guy, and they drew the line on that.
Yeah. The front office was looking to add 60 home runs to this lineup this year between, you know, DH and first base. And, you know, Walker was a guy who in the past 2 years hit almost 60 home runs.
Right.
In the past 2 years. Now, Nate Lowe was a great trade by Rizzo. He's a good first baseman. He has some pop, but he's not Christian Walker. He's not what they originally wanted.
So, Tom, if you're a Nats fan heading into the season, how do you deal with the fact that just in your own division, you've got the Mets with the biggest payroll in the league, you've got the Phillies with the top four payroll, and you have a Braves team that has a top 10 payroll? And the Nats are way behind them.
They can't compete.
When it comes to spending. Like, if you're a Nats fan, you're basically just, you're going to Nats Park for entertainment, obviously, and to watch baseball, but you don't have a realistic shot at competing in the division, right?
No.
No,
look, they have a lot of good young players. There's reason to be excited about that. But, the front office wanted last year and this year to add some veterans mixed in with those young kids because of and veterans who will be here more than 1 year.
Right.
Because a veteran presence in the clubhouse is important for the development of these young players. Maybe if they had a veteran presence who was there for more than a cup of coffee last year, your star all-star shortstop isn't in a casino at 8 in the morning on a day game in Chicago gambling.
So these teams that have gone this route before where they've kind of bottomed out, they're loaded up on prospects, the Astros come to mind, I don't know. I'm sure you can name a few other instances. Could the learners argue that they don't really have to like gradually get better? They just have to wait for the young guys to be ready, and then they'll the wins will come like almost like right away. Like you don't have to gradually get there.
But that ignores the player development part. Part of their player development plan is to, like I said, to surround all these young players with a couple of veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Look, baseball, I think more than any other sport, the clubhouse has a big influence on how the team runs. Okay, I mean, the managers and the coaches certainly have a strong influence, but inside the clubhouse, there's a lot of business conducted. And the front office felt that it was important to mix in with these young players, you know, some veterans as part of that development. Plus, they wanted these kids playing meaningful games in September. You know, let's say they're five games out of a wild card in September. I mean, then you're playing meaningful games. That is part of player development, too, is to show them what it means to be playing in pennant race Major League Baseball games. Here's the other thing. We know with the family, with the owners, that the clock is ticking on all these young players the minute they get to the major leagues.
Yeah.
You have a window of opportunity. You know, it may be 6 years, but, you know, James Woods, it's now 1 year closer to free agency. You know, Dylan Cruz, 1 year closer to free agency. We know that because they just don't sign their players to long-term contracts. So there's a window of opportunity with these young players, and to waste it on, you know, continued, you know, frugality, I think is foolish.
I mean, after they win the World Series, I'll toss 2020 out, all right, the COVID year, because they only played 60 games, and that's made some trades.
Right.
But 21 through 24, so those four seasons, they've only improved by 6 wins. So Eric's talking about gradually getting better. Okay, I guess technically you're gradually getting better.
1.5 wins per season.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting they are gradually getting better.
No, I understand what you're saying. I'm agreeing with you. Because they're not. I don't think they are gradually getting better. Now, they did bring up some of these younger guys like Cruz and Wood. But you
Seems
say
like they've already written off this year.
You say they wanted to add a couple of big bat veterans. Lowe and Bell just aren't those guys. I mean, they're going to combine for maybe 35 or 40 homers, not 60. So
right.
I think fans are just very frustrated that they're not. They're not getting better quicker because it's been basically a 5-year rebuild, and it looks like, based on what they added, it's going to be a 6-year rebuild, and who knows after that.
Yeah. Again, I think it's frustrating. The big takeaway should be, for me, is that the front office wanted to build a team that the owners wouldn't let them build.
Yeah.
And that's never good.
And you have that confirmed, the Walker story. That's locked. That's a fact.
Yes, I do. Now, I mean, you know, is anyone from the Nationals going to come forward and say, yes, that's true? No.
Yeah.
But it's been out there for 2 days, and nobody from the team has refuted it.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Tom Lavero about the state of the Nationals, one of the other things that has been happening, and I wonder how the Nationals feel about this and the ownership's how the owners feel about it, is the attendance has gone down. You know, now, when they were winning, you had, you know, attendance, average attendance, 31,000, 32,000, that sort of thing. It's dwindled to 24,000. And I got to believe it's going to be even lower this year based on the lack of activity in the offseason.
You know, I'm surprised it's as high as it's been. I give credit to the fans. They're still showing up. I thought it would even be lower. You know, the according to my sources, The learners claim they're losing $100 million a year mm-hmm. on this team. I find that difficult to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But that's their claim. Look, I know that they're in the real estate business, commercial real estate business, and that's a real tough business to be in right now. I mean, that's been crashing and continues to crash. And
yeah, it has been for 5 years.
But didn't you say that their net worth somehow has still gone up significantly?
I didn't say that. No. I don't know if it did or not.
Okay.
My point is they're still in the baseball business. If you're going to own a team, operate it like a baseball team. You know, not like a vacant office building in the district.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, in your article, you point out that there's a rift between Mark Lerner, who wants to hang on to the team, and then other family members who want to sell the team. Do you have any more insight on that? Is it just him against three or four other members of the family that want to sell and he doesn't? He's just the lone holdout?
It's not like a bad blood rift, but mm-hmm. there is a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Mark does not want to sell the team. I think the two brothers-in-laws would sell the team, and I think Mark's sister, as I understand it, you know, are siding with Mark at this point. Again, I think if somebody came along with the right price, that could change. But no one seems to be willing to do that, and the right price for the learners is probably far more than what they would actually sell for.
So if the price was – if the certain price that Mark Lerner is looking for was offered, do you think he would sell it?
I think it would be hard for them not to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there any chance that – you know, because last year the Kansas City Royals were a huge surprise because they were a team that were, you know, finishing fourth, fifth in their division – and then all of a sudden, some of the young players, like the Bobby Witt Juniors of the world, just turned into superstars, and they added some other guys, and they get to the playoffs. So they had a 30-win difference from 23 to 24. Now, I know that's not going to happen with the Nats, but is there any chance that some of these younger guys can blossom a little earlier, and they could be 10 wins better than last year? Any chance
of that? Yeah, there's a chance. Again, they've done a good job of developing players. They have some good young pitchers and good young position players, and there's reason to be excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike Kansas City, they have to play the Mets, the Phillies, and the Braves.
That's true.
What, you know,
is it 14 times?
42 times.
Yeah.
Over the course of a season.
Right.
You know, the Royals aren't doing that.
That's true.
So that's the big difference right there. Look, again, there will be a lot to be interested and excited about. But I think if you're a fan, you're getting shortchanged by your owners.
Well, I think they just don't want that in between. And I don't know that it's possible, but it sounds like they're not interested in winning 74 games. Like, they'd rather just win 65 and then wait until their young players are more ready and then go all in. So they've already decided they're not going to win anything this year.
Get better draft picks.
Yeah, they just already decided they're not going to be good enough this year, so I'm not going to waste any money. And, you know, that it probably is unfair to the fans. But, right? I mean, that's kind of how I see what their perception.
But that's not what the front office wants to do. So then,
of course,
I mean, when you have a difference between the ownership and the front office, that's never a good situation for any team that you follow.
Yeah.
Tommy, thanks as always for the time. Thanks for checking in from the Lavero Southern Compound. You're winning at life because the high in Miramar today, 70 degrees. The high here in D.C., 31 degrees. So advantage, Tom Lavero.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, boys.
Yep.
All right, buddy.
That's Tom Lavero, Washington Times columnist. Don't forget, coming up later on the show, Nick Dowd will join us at 8:25 from the Washington Capitals, and Tony Skin, head coach at George Mason. He'll be in studio with us at 9 a.m. Do not sleep on this amazing giveaway. You could win an ultimate tournament trip to Las Vegas just by listening to 106.7 The Fan. Win a trip for you and three friends during the first two rounds of the college basketball championships. Flights, hotel, and $20,000 in spending money. You'll stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Vegas's premier sports viewing destination, and you'll get to visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. Get that beach body ready. Just download the free Odyssey app. Listen to The Fan for at least 1 hour. Then listen tomorrow for at least an hour for another entry. It's Odyssey's Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. For more info, go to odyssey.com/slamdunk, and you could be the winner.
You know, I know we're calling Nick here, but
you're the doubter.
This was kind of shocking. Remember they were making fun of LIV because in Saudi Arabia, that tournament, they only did like 18,000 viewers or 14,000. That was like the average viewership on FS1.
We actually had it on TV this morning.
The Adelaide numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Like 250,000. Oh.
They got a big pop.
Much better. Much better. By far their best numbers yet. They weren't getting that on the CW.
Where's Adelaide?
Australia.
Australia.
Yeah. Is there like an Australian golfer that's really popular on the LIV Tour?
Cam Smith.
Well, I mean, it's not that. It's just that I think maybe it's time zone. Maybe people weren't into the night golf bit.
No, it's because one was shown at 10 o'clock on a Thursday, while the other was at primetime 8 o'clock on FS1, while the other one was on FS2.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's much better.
It is their much best better. Tournament, too, because the tour doesn't go down to Australia, and LIV is massive when they went down there. Remember last year they were having those huge...
But that's in the U.S.?
I know what you're talking about, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's actually fun to watch. They had the huge concerts and everything. Tens of thousands of people are at them.
Mm. Yeah, the watering hole.
Yeah.
But plus, isn't Greg Norman Australian?
Of course.
Yeah. But he's kind of been phased out.
Isn't Greg Norman Australian?
He's kind of been
phased. I had to check. I thought it might be from New Zealand.
No, he's definitely an Aussie.
But anyway, I thought it was good.
Okay, well, that's maybe why it's more popular in Australia.
Now,
you got the guy who was running it, and then you got Cam Smith, so the Australians are more invested in it. So
it's an underserved area for us.
Yeah, for sure. But all I care about is domestic U.S. viewers, and there was a lot more.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good sign.
What was it the week before? 18,000?
Like 18,000 or 14,000.
They had 12,000 in Riyadh, and then the number was substantially higher.
This one was an average of 249,000 viewers.
That's crazy.
And that's for the U.S., well, the average Australian viewership was around 225,000. Anyway, a market improvement. The TGL, the triple header, those numbers came in, and they were significantly lower. Overall, about 1 million for the day. I think they did like, 300,000 for kind of each one of the triple header.
Right.
And then Tiger played, and it was a blowout, and it was brutal. Didn't get to it did half of what it'd done before. It did about 544,000.
Right.
But overall,
it's dying
ESPN
a little bit,
but they're still thrilled because it's above what they were doing before.
Correct.
It's way above expectation, and it's above what they had before.
whatever college hoops game they were running at 7 o'clock tip on Tuesday.
And they see the room for growth.
All right, we're joined now on the Rude Guest Hotline by Nick Dowd, powered by Verizon. Dowder, good morning. How are you?
Hey, fellas. How
are
we doing?
We are doing well. How has your Four Nations face-off break been? Give us some details.
Yeah, mine's been it's been good. We my wife had ankle surgery the day before break.
Yeah, you told us about that, right? She's doing all right?
So we kind of everything's going well. She's doing well. We got another checkup today. We're going to head up there, get some stuff taken care of, but she was just on the mend a little bit, and I was at home trying to do my best impersonation of all the things that she does when I'm gone.
I'm sure. You have to be Mr. Mom.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, just, you know.
It's not easy.
What for you, what is the toughest needle to thread for watching young kids? Which is toughest for you? Do you have one that's just like, I don't know how my wife does this all the time. She's much better at it than I am.
Yeah, I think it would be like just like getting out the door on time in the morning for school.
Yeah.
So it's like I think I could get up at like 4 a.m. and I'd still be late for like the 9:15 drop off somehow.
Yeah. Do you have to make the kids lunches?
Right. So Ruby's young enough where she's not going to school yet. But you know, you got to wake them, kind of get them up and moving. Right. And then my oldest Louie, you know, just the normal stuff. Right? You got to get them up and moving, make them breakfast, get them dressed, brush their teeth, you know, make sure they look acceptable to walk out into the world.
Right.
And then, make some lunch. And then in between all that, you know, you got to walk the dogs and basically everything that every other person in the world deals with.
Yeah. Yeah. You're just not used to it
in the morning.
You're just not used to it.
I'm just not used to it. She's a pro and, you know, I'm an amateur.
Pro. You're a team.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm curious. I was reading that, the American players recently watched Miracle, which almost seems cliche to kind of pump them up for this. What's your favorite hockey movie of all time?
Ooh, good one.
I would say Mystery Alaska.
Oh, Russell Crowe, right?
Yeah, Russell Crowe. Good. Potentially Slapshot. I mean, it's a little...
Slapshot's a little, good one.
Slapshot's great. Miracle's great. I mean, I'm not knocking any of them. You're asking me to pick, like, you know, if I'm going to rank them, they're all excellent movies. But I like Mystery Alaska a lot. There's just something about the vibe, you know, of watching. When I was growing up in Alabama, watching guys play on outdoor ice, I thought that was really cool. Never got to do that really my whole life, so...
Mystery Alaska.
Dad, we had Greg Wyshynski on from ESPN a few days ago, and he brought up when we were talking about the Four Nations face-off, some of the hostility, obviously, between the U.S. and Canada was the booing of the anthem, but he also said another undercurrent was that American players, they always face discrimination when they face Canadian players because Canadian players tend to look down on the skill level of players that are born in the United States. Being an American-born player, did you encounter that a lot when you were coming out of Huntsville? You know, it's not exactly a hockey hotbed. Did you encounter a lot of that as, you know, a junior player and when you got towards your college years?
You know what? I would say I was probably relatively shielded from a lot of that, being that I was growing up in Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Like our rivals were, you know, Nashville, Atlanta, Memphis, you know, all the teams that we grew up playing in our travel league. And they weren't, you know, we didn't have a lot of run-ins with Canadian teams, you know, kind of that look down upon vibe just because we didn't play in any of those tournaments. We were too far away. Right. But I definitely think that like, there was a couple times where we went to Canada. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Silver Stick tournament. That's like kind of nationwide. And when you win certain local tournaments, like, you know, maybe the Southeast or the Northwest or whatever you want to call it, right? Like geographical location, you go to a Silver Stick tournament. And then those are usually held in Canada. And so we went up to one hold on one second here.
He's with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They put us on mute.
I think he's dropping the kids off, maybe.
Maybe he's yelling at the kids.
Oh, he's putting us on speaker. All right. Go ahead. Sorry.
You there? Oh, yep. Yeah.
We're having some issues.
No, we can hear you now.
All right, how about now?
Yeah, there we go.
So
I remember being there and thinking, like, wow, like, we're just kind of visitors at this game, and then we're in Canada here, and you know, this is what they grew up doing, and then we're just kind of enjoying ourselves. So,
how much of the Four Nations have you been watching? You gonna watch it tonight?
Yeah, I'll watch tonight for sure. Yeah. You know, I think the last USA Canada game was electric. I mean, there's not a lot of hockey games. Like, I don't actually, to be honest, I don't watch any hockey games. Right. But I turned that one on, I think, like halfway through the first, because I think all the players that are playing in it, you know, are great players. And I just kind of was interested to see how it would play out. I missed the whole beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. I had to go back and kind of rewatch that on the highlights, but I thought the rest of the game was just was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I thought both sides were great, and it ended up being a great game.
Who's your closest buddy on any of those rosters?
Oh, man.
Do you have any really close buddy that you played with before?
I don't know.
No, maybe not. I guess.
Yeah, nothing jumps out at me.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's guys that I have played with, but none of the Capitals made that team, so it's a little hard to say.
Right.
Yeah, did you think that, like, some of your teammates, like, should have been selected for either Team USA or Canada? Like, when you're watching those fights, you know, we talked about this with Coach Carberry. Like, if Tom Wilson's on that Canada roster, maybe there's not so much fighting because nobody wants to tangle with Willie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I mean, Willie brings an element to the game that not a lot of guys bring. I mean, he's probably top five. Toughest guys in the National League, maybe, you know, I mean, right around in there, and he can play the game, right? So, I mean, you could probably arguably put him on any line on that Team Canada, and he's effective. But I was stunned a little bit that, you know, a team like ours that's been playing well all year, and the standings show that, and that we have some elite players on our team. That not one, it, you know, no, I mean, I get it, right? Like, can't take everybody, but I definitely thought there was at least a couple guys, maybe more that
who off the top of your head you thought got screwed?
I think Willie could have played on that team, no problem. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of guys in the NHL could have played on any of those, like, teams, right? Obviously, I'm not from Sweden, I can't play on Sweden, but I'm just saying, I think at least Canada, U.S., there's a lot of guys that could have played on that team. I just, you know, it's probably, honestly, probably a really hard roster to choose, right? Because you're trying to probably find the best players, but at the same point, you're thinking, well, we got to find the best fits. And, you know, you're basically asking top-line guys from every team to come in and play different roles that they're not used to playing particularly, right? So, I think you got to build a team and not necessarily sometimes take the absolute best players at times. I think there's kind of a stigma about that, but yeah, I mean, I think Willie definitely could have played. I think Stromer could have played, I think Johnny Carlson for sure could have played on that D-core, no question. I mean, these are also guys that I have the benefit of watching every single day, and I watch every single game, and I know how good they are. And I think that makes a big difference. Like, there's been a lot of times in my career where we've traded for a player, or we've signed a player, or I join a new team and I meet a guy, and in my head I'm like, oh, like, that, you know, I've played against this guy, like, he's, you know, a good hockey player, but doesn't bowl the doors off, or, you know, and then I play with him every day, and I'm like, wow, this guy's like a really, really good hockey player. And it happens to me every single year, that I play with a new player. So,
hey, Doubter, you don't have a lot of entries on hockeyfights.com, but you do have one from April 13th of 2024 where you gave Michael Essiemont from the Tampa Bay Lightning. You just gave him the beatdown.
Hey, what's up with Essiemont?
Props to you for that takedown.
Where'd that start?
That was pretty decisive.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you guys remember that game, that was a game where they ended up deeming it a clean hit, but that was where he knocked Nick Jensen unconscious next to the benches. So, yeah, that's kind of where that started. I mean, I have nothing against Essiemont. Like, he actually went to St. Cloud, of all places.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah.
You gave him the beatdown.
Yeah,
I like it.
I just saw the clips, yeah. Do you ever, I mean, Do you get challenged a lot? Do you ever, or is it just considered wimpy if you turn it down, or do you have to fight? Like, how's that work? If you're not a fighter, yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think, like, I think you, as an older guy and as a guy that's, I guess, you know, I've played enough to understand, like, I think if you, you know, if you're getting challenged by, like, one of the top heavies in the NHL, and you, maybe in your head you kind of feel like, well, this is a little risk versus reward here. I don't blame guys for turning that down. I mean, there's some guys in the NHL that get better, you know, I mean, man, really, really tough guys. But, you know, I think there's a code to it. I think, you know, in that situation, just like, I can only speak on my experiences, but like the Iceman situation, I think that, you know, he drilled Gents, and Gents was unconscious laying on the ice. Like, yeah. Obviously there's going to be some type of rebuttal for that. And, you know, hats off to him too. Right. Like I just said, hey, like, you know, you want to fight? And he was like, yeah. And so, I mean, we just, you know, I think you just, there's a little bit of a, well, not a little bit, there's a lot, a bit of a code to it. And
yeah.
I think, you know, we, me and him took care of it. And then, you know, you wash it and you move on.
When he had gotten hit and he was unconscious, or was it later?
It was the next period, because I think he had to sit in the box for a bit, and then the period ended, and, you know, you kind of got to look for your moment too, right? Like, you ask the guys to do it a lot. Like, they're not trying to go out there and take a 2-minute instigator penalty and then get a fight and then put their team on a penalty kill. And then potentially, you know, now they're down 1-0 and they're sitting in the box. So, you know, you kind of got to pick your moment, and you know, it's based on the game too, right? Like, if it's there's, you know, guys do it based on, well, the energy, the building's dead, right? We need some energy in here. Like, you know, Willie's really good at that. He's really good at picking his spots, and Duhame too. Like, you know, Dewey has had quite a bit of fights this season already, and he does a great job of doing that. He sticks up for his teammates. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as a playing in the NHL for a while, I think there's a code. Like, I think there's some instances where there's no shame in saying no, because maybe the guy just beat the wheels off you and you're thinking, well,
have you ever said no?
Yeah, I've said no before. No question. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be lying to you if I said that, but, but yeah, I think there's also times where, like, you know, it doesn't happen. Put it this way. It doesn't happen a ton in a game where guys do something that, you know, kind of probably deems a fight, and someone to ask them, and that guys don't say yes to it because they know in their head, like,
they understand,
well,
they gotta pay the piper.
Like, well, yeah, you know, yeah. I kind of took a liberty there. Like, it's my responsibility to do that. And then, you know, you step up, and like I said, you take care of it, and hopefully all goes well, and you wash it and you move on. So,
right.
Doubter, enjoy the rest of your break, and best of luck against the Pens on Saturday night, man. Good talking to you.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
That's Nick Dowd from the Washington Capitals, powered by Verizon. Don't forget, in just about 20 minutes, we'll be joined in studio by the head coach of George Mason. Tony Skin will be in with us at 9 a.m. here on The Fan. Coming up before this segment is over, we'll give you a chance to win a 4-pack of tickets to go see the Harlem Globetrotters. They will be in town Saturday, March 8th at Capital One Arena. So keep listening for your chance to win, because it's coming up soon. Like 8 or 9 minutes soon. Just a little hint for you out there.
By the way, I canceled my Amazon order and I reordered it, but in a different color from the same place.
Okay.
I feel like I'm in the same purgatory.
How much is this low rent tablet costing
like
you?
Like $100.
Okay.
Like $100. It's just something I need. Whatever. Just need something cheap. I didn't need anything special.
Just need a new piece of tech.
I just need it, and it's just bothering me that it said your order might be lost. You should cancel. All right. Yeah. I did that. We'll see. I was stubborn. I should have just gotten a different one from a different place. But I ordered from the same place, different color.
Yeah.
So it's Open Line Thursday. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067, you can steer the show. And I know Drab had put the story about Matthew Stafford. Or actually, there's a lot of stories about Matthew Stafford and whether he might be on the move.
Yep.
And there's a story about Matthew Stafford's potential replacement being Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd kind of prepped this for the other day, but we could play this right now, a little quarterback carousel, because there are going to be a lot of guys.
Like, yep.
So where do you think Aaron Rodgers will end up? Because he has expressed an interest to stay. I think he ends up in Vegas.
Just stay in the league.
Yeah, stay in the league.
I know the Raiders have been mentioned, but like that just seems like a quarterback and player graveyard at this point. And I know Pete Carroll was hired. He's a respected veteran coach, but does Aaron Rodgers really want to end his career playing for a rebuilding Raiders team?
All right, let me give you the teams.
It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Let me give you the teams that need quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Or could be in the market for quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers, Jets.
Yeah.
I just don't see Tomlin and Rodgers getting along.
The Colts, potentially. Titans, Giants, Raiders, Saints. Now,
he's not going to Cleveland. He's not going to go to the Colts. It's not a thing.
What if...
I don't think he's going to go to the Raiders either. Because
I think
the Raiders
are picking five, correct? Or are they picking six? Maybe it's six.
I think they're at six.
I mean, what if one of those quarterbacks is available? I mean, Cam Ward would probably go higher than that. Shador might. But if not, why wouldn't they take one of those quarterbacks there and just boot, putting in an aged veteran that's just going to maybe give you seven wins?
Okay, they might. So where do you think Rodgers ends up? I didn't mention the Saints. So I don't know. I have eight potential spots for Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe the Saints, maybe. The Rams is the one that's the article is written about, right?
Yes.
And I don't understand that. I thought that McVay and Stafford were tight. I don't understand that.
It seems like there's a lot of rumblings coming out of the Rams camp that they are kind of moving on from the older guys. Cooper Kupp. Matthew Stafford. I think Stafford has maybe one more year left on his deal.
Yeah.
That they're maybe getting in front, and they just want to go young.
Mm-hmm.
But the Saints have.
So that's why Aaron Rodgers doesn't make sense.
The Saints have.
You're getting older by getting
correct.
No, but he's
Aaron
a great Rogers. Bridge. Honestly, he's a good bridge guy. If you're looking for a bridge,
except some people don't think he's a good mentor.
May not be a great guy in the locker room. Who knows at this point? But he could be a great bridge guy in the sense that I still think he could win a bunch of games.
All right, where do you think Sam Darnold ends up?
Well, now I'm going to say Minnesota.
You think he's going to stay with Minnesota?
I think they're going to tag him.
So if you take Darnold off the board, let's just assume the Titans and the Browns draft quarterbacks. Okay, I'm going to give the Titans and Browns. So now you got these other teams that have. Where's Kirky? Where's Cakes' boy Kirky going to land?
I could see him.
He could wind up in Cleveland.
Well, but he's saying if the Browns,
the Raiders.
Well, even if the Browns drafted a quarterback, like I could see them signing Kirk being a mentor. Starts maybe the first season.
Kirk strikes me. Don't take this the wrong way.
Yeah,
is a guy that just wants to play. He doesn't care if you're good or bad. So I think Kirk would go to a bad team.
He just wants to stay in the league as long as he can.
Well, he'll be in the league even as a backup.
What about the Jets?
But he just wants to play.
What about the Jets?
He could be a fit with the Jets too.
Or the Giants.
Any team in New York he can play for.
Or the Giants.
Except Buffalo.
What do the Steelers do?
That's a great question.
See, the Steelers, I don't know.
I could see Kirk going there, too.
Yeah, I could see Aaron Rodgers going there.
I just don't see
where
him
the
and Tomlin coexisting.
Tomlin?
I don't see it.
He's dealt with a lot of wackies before.
Yeah,
George Pickens.
I think Tomlin wants to win. Like, he's so, they just seem so stuck.
I just see two stubborn guys. I don't see that.
I don't know why I'd want Rodgers.
He just feels like an upgrade over what Russell Wilson and Fields did.
I don't know what, I mean, there's a chance Rodgers doesn't end up anywhere.
You know, I saw a side-by-side of Fields' numbers and Daniel Jones's numbers. Very similar. Very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people, I think Fields became like a sexy play. Like, oh, they should go with Fields because you just weren't seeing him.
Well, also, Fields has the spectacular in him.
He's had moments.
He doesn't have the consistency, but he does have the spectacular in him.
He can run.
He can run and he can make an occasional like highlight reel throw.
Yeah. But he's limited in the passing game, but maybe he can get better.
I keep
kind of saying that, but he's got to be with a team that's got a really good foundation.
So if you're the Steelers, what do you do? Just run it back with Russell?
No.
I would hand the keys to Justin Fields?
No, I might.
So you got to go for one of these other guys.
Maybe Kirk.
Kirk might be my guy.
Kirk's like the best of the available
like veteran
ones.
Guy.
But he just limp this year.
The teams that have, all right, maybe he had these injuries.
Yeah, his health, hopefully better.
But he's just
year removed.
But he's a year older.
He started throwing a bunch of picks.
I know.
Remember the turnover gene, which we thought he'd never get rid of, which he got rid of. It came back.
He was battling injury all year. He was coming off the Achilles.
He had like 3 or 4 weeks where he was solid, and it looked like he was rolling.
I can't imagine he just smashed into the wall and just sucks overnight. It's hard to imagine. So maybe he just had a bad year. Some guys just have bad years.
Sure.
It's like we don't let guys have bad years anymore.
But the problem is he's getting up there in years. When you're immobile like he is and you're robbed of any mobility with an Achilles injury, it really hurts you. And you saw the results of it.
Did he have any mobility before? Not really.
I mean, he was not.
No.
He wasn't a scrambler, but at least he could kind of move around in the pocket a little bit and buy himself time.
Like, my guess is he'll be a little bit better.
If there was any pass rush on him, he was like a turtle.
Well,
like,
my guess is he'll be a little bit better this year. Even though it's older, he'll be a little bit better. Just another year.
It just goes to show you how fortunate teams that have their quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
How fortunate. Because think, we're just throwing it. We've thrown in 8 or 9 teams that are
Quarter of the league.
Quarter of the league. They're just desperate for a quarterback.
And also, if you can play quarterback at all, I don't mean like top 10 level, at all, you can play until you're 40 years old. I mean, Andy Dalton just signed a 2-year extension with the Carolina Panthers because they need teams need competent quarterback play, both from the starter and the backup. Mm-hmm. And if you have any of that, you can play forever.
These teams are pretty much, they're pretty much screwed other than the two teams that will be able to draft either Sanders or Ward. Right. And that's a dicey proposition because historically less than half of those guys hit, and this is supposed to be a weak draft.
Did you see them?
So chances are both of them whiff. But if you're the Steelers, Jets, Browns, Colts, Titans, Giants, Raiders, and Saints, that's quarter of the league, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, well, except for the Browns have a top 3 pick, so they might be able to get one of the not that Ward and Sanders are going to be superstars. We don't know that. But at least they can build around a rookie and start over.
Did you see I think two of those eight
Did you see the joning between Sanders and Ward that went viral from a few days ago?
I did.
When they were working out with each other.
I didn't see that.
I think Sanders is joning on Ward saying, if I threw balls like you did, like check downs, and I'd have like a 90% completion percentage.
I think basically because Ward
and then
won. I didn't even know.
Jawing with each other.
I didn't even know there was a Ward for the best completion percentage, but apparently Cam Ward won it.
Ah.
And so
he was just
Sanders
saying
was taking
down.
A shot. Yeah. But I think Ward was taking a shot at Sanders' fitness level, too.
I'm sure they were.
I think it was a friendly back
just
and forth.
Just going back and forth with each other.
It's funny.
Yeah, but you know what? It's nice to know the Commanders, they're set at quarterback for a decade.
You're out of the business of thinking about quarterbacks in the draft.
Done wandering through that desert. They found their guy. Thankfully, after it's only took 30 years for it to happen.
Do you think he's in a lab, or you think he's out just enjoying life a little bit?
Jaden?
Yeah.
I think he's enjoying life.
He needs to be in the lab.
I think he's doing both.
He needs to be in with that headset. I want him in that with that headset.
You want him with
all
that
day.
VR.
I want him in the weight room. I want him with the headset, and I want him out there throwing. That's all I'm asking. Every day, and then you could go tag chicks.
I mean, the season's only been over 3 weeks.
Not according to his mom. His mom doesn't want to do with that.
Just condoms.
Yeah. Make sure you have plenty of those.
Like I said, get a vasectomy now. Yeah. You can reverse it later.
Yeah.
Get in front of it.
That seems like an extreme measure, but
maybe he's onto that. You might be onto something, JB.
When we come back, we'll be joined in studio by Tony Skin, the head coach of the George Mason Patriots. They're on fire this season. He's going to join us next.